how well do you really know the people living in those, you know, picture-perfect homes behind their gleaming front doors?
Especially when their lives seem bathed in luxury.
Exactly. Well, today we're pulling back the curtain on Freda McFadden's absolute phenomenon of a psychological thriller, The Housemaid.
And this deep dive, it's drawing on a whole bunch of sources. We've got the Wikipedia entry, loads of insightful book summaries, critical analyses, too.
Yeah, we're really trying to get the full picture here.
We're not just going to, like, tell you the story. We want to show you how this book became such a genuine cultural touchstone.
Right. Our mission today is to figure out why The Housemaid wasn't just a hit, but as you said, a monster hit. We'll unravel that really intricate, twisty plot and dig into the themes it explores. You know, power, deception, and that really chilling cycle of abuse.
Well, the journey of the book itself is pretty amazing, actually. From an abandoned manuscript to this global bestseller. Yeah. Freda McFadden wrote it back in 2019, but then she just shelved it. She apparently felt it was, quote, a little too dark. Maybe not like her other stuff.
Wow. Imagine thinking that about a book that would sell millions.
Yeah.
So it just sat there.
Pretty much. Until a British digital publisher, Bookoucher, they saw something in it, released it as an ebook, April 2022.
And that's when things took off.
Oh, absolutely. That's when the fuse was lit. Its success was immediate, like explosive, caught everyone off guard. McFadden signed with an agent.
Right.
And then Grand Central Publishing quickly snapped it up for a paperback release just a few months later, August 2022.
And when we say monster hit, that's really not an exaggeration, is it?
No way. By June 2024, the New York Times was reporting over 2 million copies sold.
2 million.
And the Washington Post, around October 2024, they noted about 1.6 million print copies, just print. So yeah, not just a flash in the pan.
That's incredible. And the chart performance, 83 weeks on Amazon's bestseller list.
And 60 weeks on the New York Times trade paperback list, staggering.
It even went global, right?
Yeah.
Best-selling novel in France in 2024.
Yep, over 630,000 copies just there. It's kind of wild.
And a lot of this buzz, people are saying, it came from places like BookTok on TikTok.
Definitely. That and, you know, Facebook groups, Goodreads discussion boards, it really shows the power of those reader communities driving a book's success.
It really does. Mm-hmm. But the critical reception was a bit more varied.
Yeah, quite mixed, actually. You had L'Express in France praising the heroines, cheekiness, though they did mention some longers and repetitions.
Okay, so some good, some critique.
But then you had Liberation, another French paper, describing it as something devoured like fast food, you know, mostly just for entertainment.
Ouch.
They even quoted an anonymous bookseller calling it, rather dismissively, a book for non-readers.
Wow, a book for non-readers. That's quite a statement, especially given the sales figures in it, winning the 2023 International Thriller Writers Award for Best Paperback Original.
Exactly. It's a huge contrast.
So what do you think those supposed non-readers are getting from it that maybe some critics are missing?
Well, I think it resonates because it's just so immersive. It's pure escapism, right? It doesn't try to be high literature.
Who knows, yeah.
Right. Some critics might call that simplistic or implausible. And yeah, some reader feedback mentions characters making stupid choices or plot holes.
Uh-huh.
But they keep reading. McFadden's genius might just be hooking people and keeping them guessing, even if they're rolling their eyes sometimes.
So it's less about perfect writing and more about that pure, unadulterated thrill.
Exactly. And that thrill is paying off. It's spawned a whole franchise now.
Oh, yeah, the sequels. The Housemaid's Secret.
And The Housemaid is watching. They're already out expanding the world.
And the film adaptation. That's huge news, too.
Oh, yeah. Rights got snapped up really fast, July 2022. Hidden Pictures and Lionsgate.
And they've got a writer and director now?
Rebecca Sonnenschein's adapting it. And just in late 2024, they announced Paul Feig is directing.
Paul Feig.
Yeah.
Interesting choice.
And the cast. Sydney Sweeney as Millie, Amanda Seyfried as Nina, and Brandon Sklenar as Andrew.
Wow, that's some serious star power.
Yeah.
All for a book the author initially thought was too dark.
Crazy, right?
So, okay, after that incredible rise, let's actually unpack the premise. Because the genius here is how it hooks you immediately, right? It lures you in.
Totally. We meet Millie Calloway. She's our housemaid. Young woman, really desperate for a clean slate.
She's got a rough past, a criminal record.
And is literally living in her car. You really feel her desperation for stability, for just any fresh start.
And that desperation leads her straight to the Winchesters. This apparently perfect, wealthy family out on Long Island.
Right. Nina, the wife, Andrew, the husband, and their daughter, Cecilia. On the surface, it's all perfect. Picture-perfect home, ideal job for Andrew, posh private school for the daughter.
The kind of dream job Millie feels she absolutely cannot turn down.
Exactly. But the moment she gets there, something just feels off.
Yeah, that attic room. It immediately sets this chilling tone, doesn't
it? Oh, definitely. It's not just a bit weird. It's like a physical symbol of the trap she's walking into.
It only locks from the outside.
Uh-huh.
Huh?
And has claw marks behind the door. And the window's painted shut.
Creepy.
It just screams foreboding. For Millie, and for you, the reader, the whole mansion starts feeling like a prison before anything really bad even happens.
Okay, so Millie starts the job.
Yeah.
And Nina's behavior, it escalates quickly.
Oh, yeah. Starts maybe eccentric, then becomes like borderline, unhinged, unpredictable, irrational. The book even says more witch than woman.
Wow. And she's tough on Millie.
Super tough. Harsh criticism, impossible demands, making messes just for Millie to clean, accusing her of stealing. It really paints Nina as the villain early on.
Makes it easy to side with Millie.
Completely. And meanwhile, Andrew, the husband, he comes across as the exact opposite.
The good guy.
Totally. Charming, polite, sympathetic, always apologizing for Nina's behavior. He seems like this beacon of decency.
A calming figure. It's a classic setup, really. You naturally trust him just like Millie starts to.
You do. But despite Andrew seeming so nice, Millie starts noticing weird things, little cracks in the facade.
Like what?
Well, there are locked doors she's told not to open. She overhears these whispered arguments between Nina and Andrew. And Cecilia, the daughter, she's described as troubling herself, prone to these odd, unsettling outbursts. She drops hints that things aren't right.
And then there's the gardener, Enzo.
Right. The silent Italian gardener supposedly doesn't speak English, but he manages to warn Millie that the house is dangerous.
Chilling.
And Millie starts thinking, maybe Nina isn't just neurotic. Maybe she's actually terrified. The author plants these little seeds of doubt, making you question everything.
And this is where McFadden just pulls the rug out from under you, isn't it? The big twist.
Oh, absolutely. This is where it gets really interesting. That major jaw-dropping twist reveals Andrew. He's the true villain, not the charming guy at all.
So the whole persona was fake?
Completely. He's revealed as a sociopath, been gaslighting Nina for years, twisting her reality, making her doubt her sanity, just systematically breaking her down.
God, that's dark. How did he do it?
His methods are just awful. Locking Nina in that attic room frequently.
The same room Millie's in.
Uh-huh. Subjecting her to emotional, physical torment, pepper spray, pulling her hair. Even drugging Nina and Cecilia so they couldn't leave.
Drugging them.
Yeah. His charisma, it wasn't kindness. It was a mask, a tool for deception, hiding these incredibly sadistic tendencies. It really makes you think how easily surface appearances can fool you.
And it goes deeper than just Andrew, right? There's a family history.
Yeah, that's another disturbing layer. At his funeral, his own mother, Evelyn Winchester, she reviews she disciplined him in a really similar, cruel way.
Like abused him.
Pretty much. Using, quote, torture as a means to shape him. It exposes this awful generational cycle of violence, trauma echoing down.
And the mother actually approves of what Nina eventually does.
Disturbingly, yes. She commends Nina for taking a stand and disciplining Andrew. It's chilling. And then there's another connection, the detective investigating Andrew's death. Turns out he's the father of Andrew's ex-fiance.
Who Andrew also abused.
Exactly. It's this whole tangled web of hidden pain and influence.
So this completely reframes Nina. She wasn't the crazy antagonist.
Not all. She's reframed as a victim, pushed to extreme, desperate measures. All that mercurial behavior wasn't madness. It was masking intense desperation and vulnerability.
And she tried to escape before.
Yeah, she tried, failed, and then finally confided in Enzo, the gardener.
And he agrees to help.
He does. His motivation is really personal. His own sister died because of an abusive husband, and he felt he was too late to save her, so he promises to help Nina.
Okay, so Nina has an ally, but then she comes up with this incredibly calculated plan involving Millie.
Right. This is where it gets really intricate. Nina hires a PI, digs into Millie's past,
and finds out about the prison time for murder.
Exactly. And that Millie has a history of, let's say, violent retaliation against people who've wronged her.
So Nina sees an opportunity.
A very specific, dark opportunity. She hires Millie not just as a maid, but with the secret intention of having Millie eliminate Andrew.
Whoa. Does Enzo know about this part?
Nope. Nina keeps him in the dark about the specifics. Millie's perfect for the plan, right? Young, attractive, desperate for the job appealing to Andrew, and likely to comply even when Nina treats her badly.
So Nina starts manipulating everything.
Masterfully. Plays the victim to get Andrew's sympathy. Sets up situations for Andrew and Millie to be alone. It all leads to Andrew kicking Nina out and sleeping with Millie. It's all part of Nina's long game.
And this forces us to look at Millie differently too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Her own past comes into focus. She's not this innocent bystander. Her history is full of secrets, moral ambiguity.
Which explains how she can navigate this mess.
Right. It blurs that line between hero and anti-hero. Turns out, she had her own calculated reasons for taking that job from the very beginning.
Okay, so we have these two women, both manipulated and manipulating, circling Andrew. How does it all come to a head?
Well, Andrew, now fully revealed as the monster he is, locks Millie in the attic as punishment for nearly 6 days.
6 days? That's horrific.
Yeah, forces her to balance heavy books on her stomach, that kind of cruel torture. But while she's trapped, Millie finds something Nina left behind, a hidden escape plan, basically a pepper spray bottle.
Ah, a weapon.
Exactly. So when Andrew finally opens that attic door, Millie sprays him, grabs his phone, and locks him in the attic, turns the tables completely, subjects him to the same kind of horror.
Wow. So Millie gets her revenge. What happens then?
Well, Enzo, the gardener, he's been keeping an eye on the house. He gets worried when Millie doesn't leave for days, so he contacts Nina, tells them they need to come back.
So Nina returns.
And they find the house empty. Nina unlocks the attic, probably thinking Millie is still trapped inside.
But instead,
she finds Andrew's lifeless body.
And the police. What do they make of it?
This is striking. Nina actually takes responsibility. But the police had apparently dismissed her earlier claims of abuse, you know, because of the Winchester family's influence.
Well, they don't really investigate properly.
They conclude his death was accidental. It's a pretty stark comment on how power and influence can obstruct justice, right?
Definitely. So what happens to Nina and Cecilia?
They finally get away. Move to California, there's this sense that maybe, just maybe, they've escaped that cycle of abuse.
But what about Millie? Does her story end there?
Not quite. Years later, we see her interviewing for a new job, one Nina recommended, and she finds the woman interviewing her is being abused by her husband.
Oh, no.
And the ending heavily implies Millie's going to step in, that she's become this sort of vigilante,
yeah.
A dark angel of justice.
Wow. So connecting all this back, the book is really exploring some heavy themes, isn't it?
Absolutely. Deception and manipulation are just everywhere. Not just between the characters, but how McFadden manipulates us, the readers.
Everyone's wearing a mask.
Totally. Hiding their real intentions. It makes it so hard to know who to trust. And the power dynamics keep shifting, showing how manipulation changes based on who knows what and when.
And that cycle of abuse theme is so potent.
Hugely. You see how trauma just echoes down through generations. Evelyn abusing Andrew, Andrew abusing Nina. Even Millie's own violent past fits into this pattern. It makes you think how hard these cycles are to break, especially when social systems fail.
It feels like the book also says a lot about female agency or the lack of it in these situations.
Yeah, definitely. It explores the complexities. Millie and Nina aren't just passive victims. They're burdened by their pasts, struggling, sometimes desperately, to get back control.
And often using morally gray methods to do it.
Exactly. And Andrew's control, it's psychological manipulation, physical entrapment, weaponizing mental illness. It really reflects patriarchal control systems.
Even the house itself feels symbolic.
Right. That mansion starts as a dream, but becomes this metaphor for how wealth and status can trap people, strip their autonomy, especially within the home.
Which brings us to that moral ambiguity. It really messes with your head, doesn't it?
It forces you to confront those blurred lines. Victim, perpetrator, right, wrong. Millie's journey especially, from victim to avenger. And Nina's cold, calculated revenge plot.
It's not simple good versus evil at all.
Not even close. The housemaid makes us question what justice even looks like when the official systems fail so badly.
Okay, so wrapping up. We've gone through the whole phenomenon of the housemaid. Picked apart its crazy, twisty plot, and really dug into these challenging themes. Deception, abuse, morality.
Yeah, it's clear why this book, even with its mixed reviews, hit such a nerve with millions. It sparked so many conversations about survival, justice, and what happens behind closed doors.
It really did.
Which leaves us with maybe a final thought to chew on.
Yeah.
In a world where, you know, the official systems, the police, the courts might fail to deliver justice, and where trauma can echo down through families, what kinds of justice are we, as readers or just as people, willing to accept? And, maybe more importantly, what's the cost of that alternative justice?